You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday the 13th of October 2020, and you're listening to me, Sir Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, I've got a really good news article to get into today. It's got everything. It exposes what's really going on. It's got a brave white police officer that is talking about it, and it shows that the tide could at last be turning in Scandinavia. This follows on from the article I finished with yesterday about the situation in Denmark, where the Prime Minister was pointing out the high amount of crime associated with the new arrivals. Over 60% of Somalians have a criminal record. And this news story comes from the most liberal, most welcoming to fake refugees country of them all. Sweden. Migrant mafia gangs are terrorizing Sweden's streets with a surge of bombings and murders, forcing police chiefs in one of Europe's most liberal countries to admit that they are losing their grip on law and order. And this comes from the Daily Mail. So it's strange with the Daily Mail, because they will expose what is actually going on. They will expose the migrant crime. But as soon as you get a group or organization that tries to make a platform of resisting this, they will accuse them of being racist and white supremacists. And the interesting thing about this is that it's actually a police chief that is making the allegations. So they are supporting him here rather than accusing him of being a Nazi and a white supremacist. Just 5 years after the country welcomed refugees with open arms, criminal clans from the Middle East, North Africa, and the Balkans are behind soaring crime rates in their once peaceful cities, police say, with 257 bombings and more than 300 shootings last year. Just think about that. We think we have a problem in London with all the gun crime that goes on, but in Sweden they have literal bombs and grenades that are going off there. This is the country that had all these flags out with welcome refugees 5 years ago when these people turned up. Fast forward 5 years and we've got 257 bombings within 1 year. In one extraordinary incident in August, Gothenburg's most notorious crime family, the Ali Khan gang, set up roadblocks in the northeast of the city, shining torches into cars to hunt for members of a rival mob. I mean, this is how organized these people are. And you would imagine that the most notorious crime family in Sweden would be somebody with a name ending in Musson or Henningsson or some Swedish name, not Ali Khan, the same surname as the Mayor of London. Police broke up the checkpoints and made 20 arrests. But in a move that was seen as symbolic of Sweden's soft touch, the suspects were released because prosecutors decided they hadn't broken the law. So it's perfectly fine for them just to stop all the cars interfering with people's progress and search the cars for the people that they're looking for. I mean, how can that not be against the law? I guess much of the problem with these non-white criminals is that they come out with ideas that we've never seen before amongst white communities. In an exclusive interview, Eric Nord, Gothenburg's chief of police, told the Mail Online, "These criminal clans have a completely different culture that makes them very difficult to tackle with normal police methods." And again, that's because they are a different race. We're used to Dealing with our own race, we know what makes our own race tick. We know what the body language is. We know the way people think. As soon as you add another race into the mix and you start projecting onto that other race the things you know about yourself, you're going to come out with the wrong conclusions because these are a different people. It's like if you treat cats as if they are dogs, you're not going to get the same result out of the cats as you would expect from the dogs. If you start throwing a stick for a cat, it's not going to chase the stick and bring it back to you, is it? And it's the same situation here. When you import other races into white countries, we just don't have any idea how to deal with them. And this police chief here is being honest about this. He says, we need more police and our courts and prisons need to be reinforced to deal with this situation urgently. Otherwise, we will turn into a gangster's paradise. Well, when you've got people that have a crime rate such as the Somalians in Denmark, where over 60% of the Somalians are criminals, you're pretty much saying you need to have a police officer for 60% of the Somalians there. Each one of them is going to need a police officer to prevent them from committing crime. You just don't have the resources to deal with this. And think how this is going to be in a few years' time when their numbers have increased even more. And we're not particularly talking about Somalians here. The problem that they have here, I believe, is with Lebanese. The country's Prime Minister, Stefan Löfven, has consistently refused to admit that migrants are behind the increasing violence. But as the situation spirals out of control, police officers are breaking their silence. And remember, Stefan Löfven calls these people new Swedes. He claims that there isn't a migrant violence problem because these people have Swedish passports. And he also refuses to admit that there are no-go areas in Sweden. There are many no-go areas in Sweden where the police just can't go in there. None of the emergency services can go in there. Even if ambulances go in there, they will have missiles launched at them. 2 years ago, if people linked immigration to crime, as I am now, they would be accused of being racist, Mr. Nord said. But the paradigm is shifting. And that is an amazing piece of news because it means that they can finally start talking about the reality of the situation without being shut down by ad hominems, without these accusations that are these words that were really just invented to shut down discussion, to prevent people from being able to voice their opinions about these subjects and prevent people from being able to find a solution to the problem. If you can't identify the problem, then you're not going to be able to come out with a solution. If you can't identify the people behind the criminal actions, then how can you target the response towards the people that are carrying them out? You end up wasting the resources by targeting them at everybody, because if you don't do that, then that is somehow racist because you're picking on one particular group. And finally, it looks like that situation is now changing. Last month, the country's deputy chief of police, Mats Löfving, identified 40 mafia clans who had come to Sweden solely for the purpose of organising and systemising crime. And again, it's a shame that he's actually using the word mafia here, because that tends to give the impression that these are Italian gangs that are doing this, and quite clearly they're not. His comments came after the roadblock incident, which was part of a feud sparked when members of a group called the Backer Gang shot at a member of the notorious Ali Khan group. The Ali Khan family has been dubbed a mafia organisation by Swedish police and media alike, although its members insist that the convictions of some do not represent the whole. I'm surprised they haven't accused them of being Islamophobic or of racial profiling. But it's the same thing here. They're saying that this is a family gang, and they're finally dubbing the family gang as a mafia organisation. And they're saying, well, not all of them have actually committed crimes. And this is the same with the racial thing, isn't it? You've got 60% of Somalians that are committing crimes, and yet you can't say that the Somalians are like a criminal organisation, but they can now say that this family are like a criminal organisation, like a mafia organisation, even though not all of its members have convictions. And a race is just an extended family. So it is the same. It is the same thing when you think about it like that. Members of the family have been reported to the authorities more than 200 times in the last 2 years. But in many of the cases, the informants mysteriously withdraw their complaints. And that is often what we see with organized crime. People that are going to be witnesses are terrorized into withdrawing their witness statement. In sworn testimony given at court, the local police chief, Ulf Merlander, said the Ali Khans have been part of a lot of criminal activities over the years. They have affected the local community pretty negatively for a long time. When I look at this family, roughly 60 out of the 120 individuals are over the age of 15. About 40 of them are male, and over 30 have criminal records. And I'm not particularly good at maths here, but what he is saying is 30 of them have criminal records, 60 of them are over the age of 15, so that is about 50% of them that have criminal records, and they're calling them a mafia family. And yet that's only 50% of the family. So what about the over 60% of Somalians that are carrying out these crimes? Should we not also be saying that Somalians in Denmark are the same thing, that they are a criminal family? I wonder if you looked at white people, what percentage of them have criminal records? Probably well under 10%, I would suggest. He added, the types of crime that the Ali Khans are known for are murder, extortion, serious violations of a woman's integrity, physical abuse, unlawful threats, drug crimes, and unlawful possession of weapons. And don't forget, one of these new crimes that have come out now in Sweden is to brutalize white Swedes and film this as well to enhance the brutalization. There were some Swedish kids that were found raped, brutalized, and buried alive recently by some of these newcomers to the country. And then we've got the situation of the actual sentences that they are given. Ridiculous sentences of under a year for rape. We have things going on like gang rapes of a disabled lady a while back, I seem to remember, in one of the Swedish islands. And there have been people that have committed suicide after these rapes because their lives have been so destroyed by this. We've also had a lot of refugee advocates themselves that have advocated for these people to come into the country that have then been raped by them. And there was one that even covered it up. And there was one male that was raped by one of these newcomers. And he was saying that he forgave him. And it must have been so hard for this guy being a refugee. I mean, the mind boggles at the way that people can justify this. And finally now, people are stopping justifying it and they're starting to identify it as what it is. According to police sources, the Backer Gang thug did not know that he was shooting at an Ali Khan member. In the tit-for-tat battle that followed, a Backer hoodlum was gunned down in a drive-by shooting. Poised for further escalation, the Ali Khans set up the checkpoints to defend themselves, stopping all cars from entering their patch to check for rival mobsters. So this is the situation that really set this off. The police thought, well, this is just too much. And instead of this gang all being arrested for this, they were all let off. The Ali Khan network, described by Swedish police officers and media as one of the country's most feared and violent gangs, is typical of mafia rings all over the country. Part of a larger clan that is made up of 7 related families, it has branches in Denmark, Germany, and Lebanon. The Ali Khans are seen as the clan's enforcers. Perhaps they should call them Ali Baba and the 40 Thieves. Maybe they should just call them the 40 Thieves gang rather than the mafia gang. It doesn't seem right that they are calling them by this Italian name. Surely they must have a name in the Middle East for organized crime gangs. It just doesn't seem right to me that they call them mafia. Hashim Ali Khan, 63, is believed to be the head of the family. He arrived in Sweden with a bullet in his back in 1984 as a refugee from Lebanon's civil war and set up home in a quiet suburban cul-de-sac in Angered, northeast Gothenburg, in what would become the heart of his family's territory. So we see here that this is somebody that came to the country asking for help, pleading for help because he was just a poor refugee from a war zone dozens of countries away. And yet, instead of going to the nearest safe country to the war zone, he decided he was going to travel all the way across Europe to Sweden for some reason. I mean, every one of these people that claim to be refugees in North European countries are fake refugees because there is no war in the countries that they have passed through to get there. In this middle-class, semi-detached, modern home, the frail pensioner with a large white beard receives regular visits from senior relatives. He officiates every Friday at the nearby Al Salam Mosque, which offers courses in martial arts as well as prayer and study sessions. That's interesting, isn't it? He's actually an imam. The head of this crime family is an imam. Can you imagine the head of an organised crime family in Britain being a vicar, being a priest in the Church of England? I wonder how many of these mosques actually have imams that are associated with organised crime. Don't forget that according to the Quran, if you're not a Muslim, you don't have the same rights as Muslims do. They can pretty much do anything to you, and the justification for that is that it will encourage you to become a Muslim so that you do get treated in the same way as them. This is why Christians are treated in such a bad way in fundamentalist Islamic strongholds, such as some of the places that ISIS took over in Syria, when we see that these Christians were being crucified and tortured and beheaded and all these things. It all comes from a literalist interpretation of Islam. But even if you don't have that literalist interpretation, it still says that non-Muslims can be treated in a different way. So we end up with heads of mosques like this also being the heads of crime families, and he's not kicked out of the mosque for that because the crime is taking place in a non-Muslim country. So I guess that's justified like that. Although the pensioner was arrested twice in 2019, once in connection with a machine gun found in a search, he has never been convicted of a crime. He avoided gun charges last year when his underage teenage grandson arrived at the police station claiming that the illegal weapon belonged to him. Now, we do have crime families in Britain. We have, you can think of the Crays, what have you. But most of these crime families aren't that big. They're not huge families that are also running a mosque. Again, this is another problem that we don't have with white people that we see with the grooming gangs as well. One of the components of these grooming gangs is that they were trafficking these white girls around uncles, cousins, brothers, passing them all around the family, basically. And if you have white paedophiles, it's not very often that you get a whole family of them and that they will admit what they do and pass these children around them. That just doesn't happen. It's not a part of our culture. But to be doing this to white girls is a part of Islamic culture because they have this huge history of white slavery and taking white girls and giving them to the Sultan for his harem and what have you. They would even come to the shores of Europe and snatch women and children and take them off to Tangiers and sell them on to the Arab world just a couple of hundred years ago. It says in the Quran that what you can take from the non-Muslims, you can keep them. Something about what your right hand possesses. So it justifies slavery, and that's one of the reasons why you don't really see these grooming gangs being condemned by Muslims when they get caught. You don't see huge demonstrations of Muslims condemning these grooming gangs and saying that they have nothing to do with Islam. You might see a moderate imam on the television condemning it, but you don't see big protests against it. But it's not really mentioning grooming gangs here. It is just talking about the fact that the crime runs in these large families, the same as the grooming also runs in these large families. Five of his seven children and three of their spouses have been convicted of criminal offences including murder, drugs crimes, threatening police, serious assault, and obstruction of justice. His middle son, Ibrahim, 38, was caught smuggling tear gas and bladed knuckle dusters into the city last year, and his younger son, Abdul Basset, 33, shot dead an 18-year-old Chilean in a revenge attack. Nine of the imam's 34 grandchildren have also been found guilty of crimes. Khalil, 28, for instance, has committed assault, attempted robbery, obstruction of justice, theft, and drug offences, while his brother Hashim, 22, has served two prison sentences for drug crimes, serious assault, and obstruction of justice. I mean, this is just incredible that this man is the imam at the local mosque, and he probably has his family there officiating. The Ali Khans and roadblocks in Gothenburg are just the tip of the iceberg. In addition to the 40 clans, there are hundreds of smaller gangs, and conflicts between rivals mean that only 1 month of the last 3 years has passed without a mob-related killing in Sweden. There are now 10 times as many killings as there are in Germany. And I think Germany is much, much larger than Sweden as well, has a much larger population. This summer, a 12-year-old girl was shot dead by a stray bullet near Stockholm, while in Gothenburg, a teacher was kidnapped and beaten after he reported two armed men outside his school. An 8-year-old British boy was killed in a grenade attack in the same city while visiting family in 2016. Think about that, a grenade attack in a European city, something that you would normally hear about in a Middle Eastern war zone, is now commonplace in Scandinavia. Last month, foreign exchange students at Dalarna University in Borlänge, central Sweden, pleaded to be moved from their digs in an immigrant-dominated neighbourhood after a spate of shootings, robberies, stabbings, rapes, and school arson attacks. Foreign exchange students, that is. So it's the same people from the same ethnicity that are actually carrying out all these attacks that are now asking to be moved from them. As I pointed out yesterday, it's just there's something about these non-whites. They don't want to live amongst their own people. They want to be away from their own people and living amongst whites. So we see these foreign exchange students not wanting to be in the immigrant neighbourhood. They want to be moved somewhere else. So they get moved somewhere else and more of them move in. And then that turns that neighbourhood into the same situation as the one that was full of shootings, robberies, stabbings and rapes. And this is what is happening to our countries. These people move to our countries to get away from all the problems that they have in their own countries, but all they end up doing is bringing those problems to our countries. They had been housed in the Tijana-Angar area, which has soaring rates of violent crime and is home to high numbers of migrants from troubled countries like Somalia, Afghanistan, and Iraq. And again, we're told these people come from troubled countries. They want to come to our country to make a new start and turn over a new leaf. But that's not what we see. We see in Denmark, 65% or over 60% of young Somalian men have criminal records. So when they're given a chance to turn over a new leaf, get away from all the problems associated with their own country, they don't take that chance. They just do the same thing. In a letter to university leaders sent on behalf of the International Student Union, Indian student Mufassirin Ahmed wrote, "Students are disturbed with the thought that they are experiencing the glimpse of war countries at their accommodation, which has led to widespread depression." So they're implying there that it's the same situation in Sweden as it is in these countries racked by war in the Middle East. Her friends had been repeatedly robbed, and one had been stabbed after refusing to allow unknown men access to university property. Several had seen knife attacks and heard gunshots while in their rooms studying, causing some to abandon their studies and leave Sweden. So it's so bad there, it's actually worse there than in some of these war zones. The general opinion within students is that they do not feel like they are living in Sweden. They do not hear the language or get to experience the culture and traditions. And they feel like they are living in a segregated neighbourhood, she wrote. Well, how does she think the Swedes feel living in that country where they don't actually hear their own language or their own culture or traditions anymore? Here we have a foreign student saying that this is no good. No actual thought for the Swedes that have to put up with this. There has also been a spate of humiliation robberies, in which young victims are mugged, degraded, and raped mainly by migrant youths. And that's that type of crime I was alluding to earlier, where they film this, and it's just all about humiliating the local Swedes. Traditional crime rings such as the Hells Angels, which controlled organised crime in the country for decades, are running scared. Sweden, long seen as the most open country in the world, began opening its doors to asylum seekers in the 80s and took in one of the highest numbers in Europe during the migration surge of 2015. The Ali Khans and other established clans arrived in Sweden in the first wave of mass migration 30 years ago. So that's all. They've just been there 30 years, and this is the chaos that they have managed to wreak. Can you imagine what it's going to be like in another 30 years when they have quadrupled in size? The family originated in Palestine and Mardin in southeast Turkey, but spread to Lebanon in the last century and from there to northern Europe. More recent arrivals are adapting to the gang culture. Syrian-born Uday Al-Wakid, for example, joined the Ali Khan family as a foot soldier. According to a police source, he served Fadi Ali Khan loyally until he was sent to prison for 2 years after stabbing a rival in the neck in a targeted attack. Police intelligence chiefs have told Mail Online of their concerns that Syrians and other new migrants are starting to form their own crime rings that will one day challenge the likes of the Ali Khans. And of course, Syrian refugees is what we were all being told we needed to take into our countries in 2015. All they had to do is say that they came from Syria and they were allowed in. And once again, we see that once we allow these people into our countries, a certain portion of them turn against their hosts and turn our countries into replications of their own homelands, with all the violence associated with it. According to Mr. Nord, these crime rings are drawn to the country by state handouts. Finally, again, someone is pointing this out. It is the welfare state that is the magnet that attracts these people. Why have they based themselves in Sweden? It's obvious, he said. Our generous welfare system and trusting society can be exploited by the criminal networks. And of course, that trusting society is now gone. You cannot keep having the trusting society when you have a multicultural society. That's the first thing that goes, is the mutual trust and the sense of community, because you can't trust these people anymore. You can't trust them not to steal. You can't trust them not to litter. You can't understand what they're saying because everybody is speaking a different language. He says, half of the disabled benefit we pay out is fraudulently taken by the gangs. Sometimes they get divorced so that the government will give them another flat, and then they move back in with their ex-wives and rent it out. Another problem with the disabled benefits, particularly in Britain, is you have so much cousin marriage that goes on in the Muslim communities. Because you have this cousin marriage that goes on, because that's what Muhammad did, you have a lot of people that are born with congenital defects, severely mentally disabled, and they get masses of benefits. It wouldn't surprise me if in Britain 50% of the disabled benefits go to these newcomers. And I'm not saying they're not due that benefit, because as I say, they're severely mentally disabled. And what he is saying here is that there is a lot of fraud that's involved in this. And also with these with the housing benefit, with these flats, moving out with their ex-wives and renting the flat out. He says, when the clan system found in the Middle East, North Africa and the Balkans was transferred into Sweden with our high level of social trust, it mutated into organized crime. Very interesting what he's saying there. The clan system is just a legitimate system. It's just the legitimate way of them living. And he says that when you put that with the Western countries that have social trust, it cannot help but mutate into organized crime. I mean, what he's saying there is they have a propensity for this crime that they can't commit in their own countries. But once they come to our countries, where we have the greater level of social trust, they will take advantage of it and become criminal gangs. He says, we see the migrants leaving the country for a few months and then coming back in a wheelchair to claim disability benefit. This is the beginning of the exploitation. It is terrible because police resources are being used to address the problem that we have created ourselves. Good point that he makes there. This is all created by ourselves. It's all created by our own governments. White people are the majority in our governments, and they have brought in these policies that bring these people in. And we have voted for these people. You can only blame ourselves for the situation. I know people don't like to hear it, but it is down to us. These non-whites, these people that are coming into our countries, they are only doing what comes natural to them. It is up to us to not encourage them to come to our countries and to do what we can to get them to go back to their own countries. And that needs to be done through the state, of course. We're not going to be able to succeed doing it as individuals. Inspector Ulf Bostrom, head of Gothenburg's Integration Unit, who has been a police officer for 42 years, told Mail Online that the withdrawal of community police patrols in the 80s created a vacuum that was filled with migrant gangs. "When the cat is gone, the rats dance on the table," he said. "In Sweden, the cat has been gone for 30 years. With no police on the beat, there was no way of showing our legal boundaries to new arrivals." I'm surprised he said that, because he could get accused of calling these non-whites rats, couldn't he? He's dehumanising them there. And of course, if this had been a representative of a nationalist organisation that said that, that would be in quotes there, and they would be accusing the person of dehumanising the poor refugees and accusing them of hate speech. But because this is a police inspector that is saying this, that they're not able to do that. And that's the really good point about this. It's actually the police that are saying this. "The clans have a code of silence. They don't trust Sweden's authority and they won't speak to us. We have 184 nationalities in Gothenburg alone. The clans view white Swedes as just another clan that happens to be in control of the country's institutions." Imagine that, 184 nationalities, 184 different languages that you are hearing, 184 different customs, different body language to try and cope with and understand. He said, "We had a plan for integration that obviously failed. Fixing it will be very difficult. A generation of young men has been born into crime families on Swedish soil, and they see themselves as untouchable." And again, and they live in these no-go zones as well. So they are completely untouchable. The veteran police officer added, "It is our own fault, but the politicians will not admit it. We can't solve it with surveillance or military-style policing. If police are not patrolling the streets, how can we integrate these parallel societies?" And the answer is you can't. You have to encourage them to go home. Patriotic Alternative have this suggestion of offering them financial incentives to return home when they commit crimes instead of being put in prison. And that would be a good start, I think. Johanna Backstrom Lerneby, author of The Family, a book about the Ali Khans, said, "Normal Swedes trust the state to look after them and keep them safe, but the clans trust only their families. For them, family is more important than life and death. The state is not important. They don't speak to the police. They are living in a different world." And that is the Middle East custom, that the family is more important. That is just the way that they live. You're never going to be able to change that. That is an ingrained culture and an ingrained instinct that they have. "So powerful have the crime rings become," she added, "that they even have lawyers in their pockets. Earlier this year, solicitor Edip Samuelsson was penalised after he was found to be helping two gang members coordinate their stories while in custody facing drug charges. Unlike other gangs, the clans are bonded by blood and run on a strict family hierarchy." And again, because of that, they are succeeding. How much better would our nations be if we understood that we were bonded by blood and ran on a strict extended family hierarchy, which is the way that everything else works in nature? If our states were run on the basis of ethnicity, rather than multiculturalism and shared ideals or whatever, they would be massively successful, far more successful than we are. And we see the proof of that in crime, because that's what these crime gangs are doing. They're bonded by their blood and they run on a strict family hierarchy. And that's why they're succeeding in this. Not because they're extra bloodthirsty, or not because they are stealing more money or anything like that. It is because they understand that they are bonded by family bonds. Blood is thicker than water. "The war with the Backer Gang ended when older members of the Ali Khan group set up a peace summit in the 5-star Clarion Post Hotel in central Gothenburg, less than 500 yards away from the city's main police station." I mean, that really is sticking two fingers up to the police, isn't it? "The Backer Gang agreed to pay substantial reparations to avoid further violence," police sources have claimed. The only significant action taken by the Swedish authorities was to take one of Khan's teenage grandsons, who was present at the Brazen Summit, into care. Taking him into care? Why don't they shut the mosque down, for a start? Taking the child into care, they need to be shutting down this mosque and deporting these people. You might think it was good for the two sides to make peace, but it just made the police more worried, Inspector Bostrom said. It means that they are now working together under the radar, and it is impossible to know what they are doing. And just think, if they were all to get together and start working together, they could just rise up in the night and just massacre all the Swedes and take control of the institutions of the state. That's the situation here. Once they become the majority in the country, they will be taking over. Something needs to be done about this. And it finally looks like there might be some changes in Sweden. And it's absolutely fantastic that they are now speaking about this subject. And it's actually being led by the police. And I think it's very courageous of them to start doing this. When you compare that with the way that the Prime Minister, Stefan Löfven, has been covering this up. So this is very, very good news from Sweden. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.